Which is more intricate, he mused, the designs of men trying to reach gods or that of gods trying to reach men? My hammer collided with a chunk of granite. What is either to the intricacies of women who reach both?
Welcome to the Busy Girls Book Club. We are bringing you all of the internet's most popular books and letting you know whether or not you should take the time to read them. And this is our last book of 2025. I'm Caitlin.
I'm Catherine.
And I'm Casey. And we are finishing the year off with a fantasy book from an author who we have read before. The book is The Night and the Moth by Rachel Gillig, who wrote the One Dark Window series. And the plot of this book, it's a different universe, but it's still that kind of dark fantasy vibe if you read her other book. And the main character is a type of oracle figure where she's one of six women who drown in this kind of magical special pond. And when they drown, they have visions that indicate if people are in favor with the gods of the various realms of this society. So they're these kind of like powerful, very revered, like spiritual figures. But they're also just normal girls, normal young women. And they do this for 10 years before they are kind of released back into the society of which they're from. Even though they've been like very sheltered and cloistered in this abbey type setting overseen by the abbess. And then the story kind of starts and like starts to kick off when the king of the realm comes to get his reading. And the diviners, the diviners, however you say it, this group of six women who give their prophecies, meet the knights and meet the king, and everything kind of goes from there as they realize the world is not as simple as they were led to believe by the abbess.
Good. Great summary. Jinx.
Okay, well, do you guys have reviews?
I chose two.
You chose two?
Yeah.
Okay, go for
one
it.
One of them was short. It's just 5 stars and says Bartholomew.
That's a great review.
But yeah. The other one is 4 stars and it says, sometimes I think I am a critical thinker or reader. Sometimes I get slapped in the face with the most obvious plot twist that really makes me go, do I even have a brain? Thoroughly entertained. We'll be picking up the sequel.
That's so fair, though.
I did see the plot twist coming, but it was still a really good plot twist.
Yeah, I saw it 100% coming. I have a 1-star review, and I'm just going to read the first sentence and maybe like one extra line from that. It's on Goodreads, and it says, stunning cover, interesting and well-written start, and the gargoyle was the best character. Those were the good parts. It was so horrendously dull.
Ouch. Okay. I have three little quick ones. All 1 star. One is changing my review from 2 stars to 1 star, as I cannot justify adding an extra star because I liked the gargoyle.
Oh. See, that's so fair.
Lots of gargoyle content in these reviews. Second one, 1 star. Basic baddie goes to the Middle Ages. If I hear oi one more time, I'm going to die. And then this one's probably my favorite because I also related to some of these points. But she said, after the first few chapters in which the vibes are immaculate, you can tell the author is just checking off plot beats and romantasy tropes. In all seriousness, though, it's very hard to take a book seriously when the writing whips wildly from throwing shadows hither and yon to priestesses who smoke weed and fuck. That said, if you have a nun foot fetish, this is for you.
You caught me there with the off guard with that one.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely not where I thought the review was going to go. Also, it kind of made me laugh in hindsight of reading Dungeon Crawler Carl, where the foot fetish
is real.
Um, Anyway, overall, the book has really good reviews. The overall Goodreads rating is 4.6 out of 5, and the Fable rating is 4.4 out of 5. The Storygraph rating is 4.36 out of 5. Where do you guys come down?
This checked all my boxes. Yeah, I gave this 5 stars. I was in a bit of a reading slump, reading pause, and I don't know, maybe it was slow. I loved it. I, first of all, love Rachel Gillig's writing in general and how kind of whimsical it is, kind of mysterious it is. But I really didn't have anything wrong with this book. I really liked it. It wasn't like my favorite book of the year, but I had no issues personally with this book. So 5 stars.
That's, yeah, I figured you'd have this at 5 stars even before I saw your review.
This is like a me book. So very a me book.
Yeah. I'll go next because I'm pretty sure I'm the next quote unquote highest. I gave it 4. It's kind of like a soft 4. Like, I'm not like fully like
soft, which direction?
Like soft leaning towards 3.
Oh no.
But I'll give it the 4 because I appreciated the main character. I liked the world. It's just the reason why I am giving it a 4 is because it was a little too predictable. And it felt like the plot was slapping you in the face the entire time. And if you didn't guess it, like, that's crazy. It was pretty fucking obvious.
Yeah. Don't hate on the person whose review I read. Not everybody reads fantasy like it's their job.
That's fair. That is fair. Still, it's too predictable. And the foreshadowing is not even shadowing. It's just fully blurting it out at you.
Yeah.
I liked it. So I was just... We'll get into it later. But then I was excited just waiting for the characters to find the plot twist. I was like, it's coming. It's coming.
Okay. I feel pretty similarly to Catherine. I gave the book 3.5 stars out of 5. And I liked it. It's just that I liked the first half of the book so much more than I liked the second half of the book. The first half of the book is really interesting. It's very mysterious. You kind of go through a lot with the character. There's people disappearing. The magic system is crazy. There's these like sort of mythical women who wear shrouds. I mean, it's just a very fascinating world to go into. And that really like had me at the beginning. And then as the book continues on, I did find myself getting a little bored. I thought the direction of the plot was obvious. There was some things about the main leading man that I just found a little annoying. Like, overall, I thought just everything was fine. I just thought it went from being a really interesting book to a really basic tropey book. And I just wanted a little bit more from it than that. I thought the journey was ultimately a little too easy for the characters.
Agree.
Fair. I'll allow.
You'll allow.
Oh, wow.
It does. I didn't know we needed your permission to rate it low.
It always give a like, mid rating. Yeah.
Yeah. I always feel like the person with the highest review is like the one who like accepts the critiques of the book because you're the person who is like the most likely to disagree. So you're always
y'all know when I'm reading a good fantasy, I turn off my brain. I'm along for the ride. I find no issue.
Okay. Well, our first discussion question up is the book more plot or character driven?
Plot.
Plot. Yeah. Which is why I liked it so much.
Yeah.
It is Caitlin's plot. Dream to have a plot book.
It's been a while, guys, since it was so plot driven.
Yeah, you're right.
That is true. We've been reading a lot of character-heavy books.
It's probably why it brought me back to life.
Yeah. Okay. We've already kind of answered this question at the beginning, but would you read other books by the author? This author also wrote the One Dark Window series, which we've all read the first book. Well, I've read the first book of, but not the second.
Catherine and I have read the full duology.
Which is crazy that you haven't read the second, Casey, because the second is the better one, and you would enjoy it.
That's what everyone tells me. Second.
And I actually want to read the second
one. I met them as like one book.
I really enjoyed One Dark Window. I enjoyed it actually more than this book, and gave it a full 4 stars instead of a 3.5. But so I would read the second book. It's just that I haven't gotten around to it.
The second book is wild. Mm-hmm. And it's like not a perfect ending, which I appreciate.
Yeah.
Right. It does matter. Has this author read anything else that you guys have read?
I think that might be her only stuff.
I think that is, because I'm pretty sure One Dark Window is her debut novel.
I think.
Yes. So she also wrote The Knave in the Moon. Is that
the same? No, that's the Next Night in the Moth book.
Oh, I see. Okay, never mind.
That's the second one in this series. I don't know if it's a series or duology again.
I don't either. But she's gotten some pretty good feedback from us. I would read other things she's written, but
would
I don't.
Would you read the second book in this series that's coming out?
No, I just don't really care. I don't really care about the characters, which is, I think, one of my core critiques of the book, outside of the gargoyle.
We love the gargoyle. A lot.
I would read the second book just for the gargoyle.
Okay, anyway, next question. How is the pacing of the book? How long did it take you to read?
I think it took me like 3 days. I would say for a book that's kind of short, the pacing is not the greatest. Just like what you said, Casey, like I think in the middle and then towards the end, the pacing kind of lags because they're kind of doing like a quest, and the quest is very repetitive in nature. Mm-hmm. And there's not a lot of, like, character growth in that.
Yeah.
I think, at least for me, it read very, like, traditional. Like, slower setup at the beginning, but not uninteresting, and then picked up pace as, like, the quest went on. So I thought it was fine. I read it in a couple big chunks, and I wanted to keep reading. But obviously, I liked it more than the others, so.
Yeah, I'd agree with Catherine's points. I blew through the first half of the book, like, ate it up. And then after they defeated their kind of, like, first boss, I feel like after that, I kind of started getting bored. And it felt a little repetitive, and I expected things to be more difficult and also, like, the main character at that point has gone through a lot, and I think I expected it to be a little bit more overwhelming. Mm-hmm. I just thought it would, the intensity overall should have ratcheted up a lot higher than it did. And so the second half of the book, I like crawled through. Like, I think I read it in mostly two sittings, but that's because I read the first half and then like couldn't motivate myself to keep reading the second half. And then we actually had to push back the recording date because I couldn't finish the book in time.
It was your birthday, so.
Yeah, I also had a busy week. I had my birthday week, and I'm preparing to go back home. It's the holidays. Y'all get it. Anyway. So, yeah, I'd say that the pacing of the book is kind of mid. It's not terrible, but it's also not great.
You would expect better for a book that's so short.
Yeah, and I actually kind of wished it was longer because I wish she had built out some of the plot points a little bit more. And I never say that, which I think is how you know the book has good bones, but I just didn't.
Yeah. I think Rachel Gillig is very good at world building, so I would read longer books from her. I think she writes normally pretty shorter books, which I honestly, it's more props to her because I feel like authors tend to lean on the side of heavy page count. So the fact that she can edit it down into concise, like, plot lines, actually kind of impressive.
I mean, I thought she did pretty good creating an entirely unique magic system in as few pages as she had.
Yeah.
I don't know. On that point, I'm also, I thought the priesthood and the belief system was really well built out, but the magic system, I was like, I do not understand this. I do not understand how this works. And I don't really understand this society outside the religion.
Yeah, I don't get the buy-in, but I got the magic system.
Anyway, I don't want to spoil anything. Would you watch a movie or TV show of the book?
I probably would.
Sure. Not sure I want to see the people get eaten, though.
Yeah, that's a lot.
Spoiler alert, this book entails cannibalism yet again.
Well, not, I mean, yeah, no, you're right.
I was about to also say, no, I'm talking about the other thing, but no, you're also right.
Wow. We end on a high note, y'all. End on cannibalism.
One more cannibalism read.
Oops.
Anyway, I think I would. I actually found this book when I was reading it, just picturing it in my head, to be very visually stunning.
Yes.
Like, there's very mm-hmm. strong imagery, and I would be interested in seeing that on screen.
Yeah. It was a bit like Lord of the Rings questy kind of setting.
Yeah. Okay. What about your busy girl ratings?
I'll stick with my 4. It was fine. Pacing wise, I mean, like, I have my critiques of it, but it's short enough to where, like, I think anybody with a busy schedule can probably get through this book within a week. So I'll stick with my 4.
I'm actually going to stick with my 5 because I think this, just like I use One Dark Window, would make an excellent gateway fantasy book for anyone who's never read fantasy, even. So, and I had no issues with the pace myself. So I'm going to give it a 5.
I think I'm going to boost mine up a little to a 4. I think for me, I always ask myself when I'm doing busy girl rating, like, would I honestly recommend the book? Like, I find it hard to rate, give it a good busy girl rating if I know I wouldn't recommend it.
Oh, we know.
Just because I think, like, then it's a waste of time. So who cares how short it is? But I would recommend this book still. I still think that this is a good fantasy book, and I still found it entertaining enough that, like, I would definitely still recommend it to people, especially if they're looking for a fantasy read, because it was short and it was interesting, or at least had interesting parts. So I'll give it a 4.
Okay. Well, I think that does it for our spoiler-free section. There are some, like, decent plot twists. So if you plan to read the book, we said you might be able to predict them, but maybe you still don't listen to the second half of this episode. But everyone else would love to have you along for the ride.
Yeah, sorry if I offended y'all when I said, like, you should be able to predict these things. I recognize now that we read a lot of books.
I think if you've read fantasy, you probably saw it coming. Also, I think you're right that the foreshadowing was, like, not foreshadowing. It was
just, hitting you over the head with a brick.
It was more like anticipating than foreshadowing.
Yeah, but I think it was meant to be foreshadowing.
It's one of those, like, that meme, there were signs. Like, yes. There were signs.
There were signs.
Yeah. Anyway.
Our first question up is, what did you think of the world? How about Aisling and the 6 diviners? Did you expect them to be food for the omens?
Whoa, we're jumping right in.
Yeah, yes. Catherine said, first question. Let's
first question.
Cannibalism. Yes, period.
Okay, well, since we don't get that until the very end, I'm going to start with the first part of the question. Mm. I thought the world was really interesting, especially how the main character at first knew so little of the world, and, like, she was so sheltered by the abbess. And so, I don't know, it was really interesting to explore the world alongside her. Interesting how it's set up in, like, 5 hamlets or whatever, and each hamlet has a patron omen/god kind of thing, and then a kind of along with that, like, a craft they all perfect. And I don't know, I like something orderly, you know. I think as kids reading The Hunger Games, we all love a district.
A good district, yes.
And it was also just very, you know, medievally and well described, and I was super engaged. And then I loved the beginning with the 6 diviners. Mm-hmm. And I'm really sad about the outcome for them.
Yeah. I'm glad you call them diviners, because I also call them diviners. So when Casey said whatever she said, I was like, wait, what?
I don't know if that's correct at all. Like,
But yeah, I predicted that they were going to be food for the omens. I predicted they would die at least. And then
once they met the first omen, it wasn't hard.
Yeah. So I kind of, yeah, I guess that that's was going to be the case. I obviously, like, you do kind of get attached to them despite not knowing their names. You just know them as 1 through 6, which is crazy work, y'all. But I love the world. I loved their naivete because I think it's like it comes from a genuine place. It's not like other books we've read where it's like the person is just willfully obtuse. This was like carefully calculated, like being obtuse and like being ignorant to the world because like they needed them to be that ignorance. So I really, I liked it, and I liked the divining and everything like that. And like finding out like more about the magic system and more about the world in general as you like go along with the book. So you're learning with the main character. But yeah. The cannibalism was not shocked by because I think we've read enough fucking cannibalism books to know when it's happening.
Well, I also want to add, I like that despite being so sheltered, they were still a little bit rebellious in their own ways.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that was really fun. Like, they had personalities.
Yes.
They did. Yeah, I loved the world. The world was like a big highlight in this book for me. Like, I loved the beginning. I loved getting to meet the diviners, and I loved their sisterhood. Like, sisterhood is one of those like tropes that just always gets me. Like, I'm here, I'm invested. Those characters felt really real to me, and I also felt very emotionally invested in them. And I thought their kind of role in the religion was very fascinating. So I thought at first, like, it was just a really interesting way to start a story, and the kind of introduction of the knights and everything was just so fascinating to me. I did expect them to be food for the omens because, yeah, it was obvious at a certain point. But I think for me, I was like, I was glad the author did the hard thing and they were actually dead. Like, thank God.
Can't be resurrected.
Secretly hoping at least one of them would not be.
But yeah. Yes.
They were dead.
Thing that I think was hard with it, though, is that because I was so emotionally invested in them and I wasn't as emotionally invested in the other characters, that knowing that they were dead took some of the stakes out of the book for me because it becomes a revenge story instead of like a mystery. And I think it could have been done a little bit differently to like maintain the mystery a little bit longer. Like if the people who were actually the gods needed to perform some rite or something and some of the women were still alive, I think I would have actually enjoyed that more, which I hate saying just because I missed them and they added a lot to the story.
And you said for every book, do the hard thing, and she did the hard thing.
I know. And now I'm mad that she did the hard thing because I'm like, well, I was only reading for these characters. I'm glad if all of them had been alive, I would have given the book 1 star. But if one of them had been alive, that actually probably would have been better.
Well, and there was like an opening where it could have been possible in the last omen.
Yeah.
Nope. The abbess broke all their necks.
Yep.
I did. Okay. I will say one plot twist was I didn't know how they were disappearing until we found out that the abbess had the loom stone. And then I was like, oh, okay. So I actually didn't predict that part, but that was very minor.
Yeah. I feel like that's not really a plot twist.
No. It's just something I couldn't figure out.
It's just a mechanic.
But I was frustrated because I figured out pretty much everything else. So,
yeah. Okay. Speaking of omens, those crusty bastards. What did you? Well, we already discussed religion a little bit, but what did you think of like the abbess and the abbey and this whole kind of capitalistic church she had going on, forcing her little diviners to live there for free and while everyone pays to have their divination.
Indentured servitude. I mean, it just hits all my...
repeatedly?
Yeah.
Horrifying.
It just hits all of my points about anti-religion, anti-capitalism. I mean, yeah. It's so well written in the sense of like... of how religions can use and abuse their patrons to get money out of them or to basically like stiff them. And promise things that are not promisable, like promising eternal damnation if you don't pay for them, or promising heaven if you do give them money. Like, that's a ridiculous promise to make, but like, it's one that you can't see in your lifetime. So like, they're never going to get their like comeuppance for that. So I think it's always interesting when you bring in religion into a book and you kind of turn it on its head and be like, hey, like, this is not good. This is not okay. But I think it's also very interesting as a government system to have like the king be beholden to a religion and then be voted on by the knights. So it's like semi-democracy, but also it's an oligarchy and a theocracy.
Yeah. I don't know. The omens were like, I liked that they were scary, sort of like depicted as kind of scary beings.
Yeah.
And not, you know, benevolent. And they're just descriptions of them were very, very like vibrant descriptions. And yeah. So they were kind of spooky in a good way. I liked it. The Abyss. I think at first when I was reading, because of the title, I thought, and because she dreamed of the moth, I kind of thought she was going to be the moth or something. But then as it went on, I was like, no. But that could have been interesting.
Yeah.
If Sybil was the moth?
Yeah, I don't know. Would have made it more complicated in the, like, in the plot.
That could have been interesting.
I wondered, actually, if her little tools were actually sacred moth artifacts. Tools.
Yeah. They might be.
We still don't know that.
We still have yet to find out, technically. I liked the Abbess. I liked that she was sort of this, like, dark motherhood figure, and it's very fairy tale-esque to have this kind of like evil mother, and I really liked that. My one complaint about the Abbess and the omens is that I wish when they died it affected more. Like, I wish something had been like tied to their lives that changed in the society, because they were all kind of easy to kill, and it actually felt sort of pointless to kill them because they didn't really do anything.
Yeah.
I think that was the point. It's like you're putting your entire faith in these people that are people and aren't.
Are hungry.
They're not, you know, they're not that great. I think we'll get more of that in the second book, though, because, like, I appreciated that Benji kept saying, we have to give them something to believe in when we, you know, destroy this religion, which is true. Like, power exists in a vacuum. Like,
yeah.
So I think we'll get a lot more of that in the second book.
He's going to try and create that power now.
But, you know, like, the people in the towns and stuff, they like live by their omens' creeds. And so it'll be interesting to see what happens to the kingdom.
Yeah. I think it just made the whole book feel a little bit more pointless, because the whole time I was reading, I was kind of like, why do they need these artifacts? Like, the only reason they need these artifacts is so Benji can put himself in power. Like, there's not really a point to this other than anointing a new lord. And the other characters just took a long time to realize that's what was happening. But as a reader, I think it just took some of the point out of it, and it made the quote unquote plot twist that much more obvious, because I was like, clearly the only point to this is to like enrich Benji.
Well,
because there's no other impact outside of that.
Because they were saying like, we're taking up the mantle. So I don't know what the mantle totally was. And I also don't know. Because, like, I guess if you show the people that you have the artifacts, then it really proves that they're dead. Because, I mean, like, you're not going to, like, take the omen's dead bodies and be like, see, look. But, like, at the same time, I'm also like, yeah, how did they not predict that Benji was going to double cross them and be like, nah, fam.
I mean, yeah. I briefly had hoped that it would be like each of their little gang would have a little artifact and they'd be like, cool. And then obviously that can't happen. But...
Because I was like, why do they need these? Why do they need them? Why can't they just live knowing the religion is fake and let everyone else have it?
I think the point was just murdering the omens, and that was mostly it.
They just hated them.
They just got magical objects from it.
Yeah. Anyway.
I mean, they were sucking the wealth out of the kingdom, essentially.
But to me,
I also can't wait for whatever storyline will happen when we realize you should leave the sprites alone and feed them, and then you wouldn't have any problems.
Yeah.
Because the omens are also killing the sprites.
Mm-hmm.
So there's this storyline that's coming, too.
Which I did like that commentary, because that part was about how the society denied this group something they needed and then villainized them when they were forced to get it by, like, you know, forceful, violent means. And it was like, well, if you don't give them something they need, then they have to forcefully get it. So
yeah, they wouldn't become man-eaters.
A cornered dog will bite.
Right. But anyway, we'll see what happens next. I did feel like the Abbess was just really the only big bad that mattered, because she was really the person who was behind everything and orchestrating it all.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So what about our male main character, Rory?
How is Rory a nickname for Broderick?
Yeah, that's a crazy nickname.
Sorry.
You had that ready.
I did.
You were ready for that.
The whole time. I was like, I don't get it. Benedict is also weird.
Benji, yeah, for Benedict is weird, yeah.
Benji's for Benjamin, usually.
Yeah.
I did talk that, too.
Because where's the J in Benedict?
I was like, what's the point in making his name Benedict if you're just going to call him Benji? Like, just make his name Benjamin.
I guess Benedict's more kingly,
Roderick,
I don't know.
Mandacious or whatever.
Mandacious, yeah.
Yeah, I keep wanting to call him Rodney because I have an Uncle Rodney, and so that, it doesn't go well. Anyway, you knew the second you saw him on his horse who he was to the main character.
Yep.
Yeah.
I'm not mad about it.
No.
Dark brooding man. Little bit of, I don't know, cunning wit.
Mm-hmm.
Disregard for the rules. Not the kind of person I would be into in real life, but I love it in a book.
Yep.
The bone I have to pick. In general, I liked the romance. I had no problem with him as a character. Like, I thought, fine. Like, there was nothing weird or bad about it. The thing that has really started to drive me crazy is I feel like in all these fantasy books, you start out with this sassy backbones, like, sort of dark horse man. And at the end, you have this tiny drowned little puppy. And I'm like, where did all the fun parts go? Where did all the fun parts go about him? I feel like they fall in love and then just completely make the character a different person. And in doing that, it's like, well, like, I understand that he's in love. I'm not expecting him to be the, like, biggest grouch in the world forever. But I'm also like, this is just a new character. It's just not who he was before. And I don't think that's really a good thing. And it makes it uninteresting.
I think he was always not a grouch to his friends.
Yeah.
So I think she was just seeing the side that Maud and Benji got to see all the time.
But then it's like they fall in love with him as someone else.
I think she just got to see other facets of him. That's all. He got to see other facets of her.
But it's just, it feels to me like he just becomes a different person. Like, there's no vestiges left of who he was before. It's like, oh, now every time he talks to her, he's like, oh, my goddess. Oh, let me defend you. Oh, you're so great. And I'm like, what happened to the banter?
It happened with Rhysand. It happens in every book.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's a problem.
You want more banter?
Yeah. Why does the character, the male character, have to just turn into like a
lovesick
puppy?
Term is cinnamon roll.
Yeah, cinnamon roll. He just becomes a cinnamon roll.
A little crispy on the outside, a little soft and gooey on the inside.
I'm fine with cinnamon roll. I just think we should maintain some spice in our cinnamon rolls. Like, we don't have to make them such love drunk idiots.
Yeah, but now he's going to tear down the world to get his woman back, and I can't wait.
I roll my eyes. I roll my eyes at that.
I had no problems with the romance, but...
Yeah. My only problem is with that Rory was a nickname for Roderick.
That's a fair statement, yeah.
I did like their falling in love story. I did think it was cute.
I was thinking, this is the most well-paced romance I've read in a while. Because they weren't doing anything nasty until, like, 70% in. I was like, you know what?
Fair.
That seems better than, like, insta-love or just, like, the slowest slow burn ever.
God, I'm looking at the
spark
of
the ever flame.
Though I'll say, I still hate how quickly they fell in love.
It is a little insta-lovey.
Of the romance is perfect. And then all of a sudden they're in love. This is part of what I mean. I'm like, this is happening so quickly. Like, guys, this is too quick.
We don't want need to a little say more tension.
Yeah. We don't need to say I love you in book one.
There is also, she's never met, like, many other men. So who knows? Maybe someone else out there.
I was waiting for her to, like, I don't know, like, come out in this book because she kept saying, like, men don't do it for her.
Mm-hmm. And she had her thought friend. She was, like, asexual briefly.
Well, I think that she's bisexual because she has slept with both men and women.
Yeah.
And she did too. Flag on the play with friendship number one.
Yeah, and that's why one couldn't be alive.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Because competing love interest.
Yeah.
And here's where, if we went harder into the fantasy genre, they would just form a harem. But we're in romantasy still, so the girl has to stay dead.
Well, she doesn't. It's fantasy. We've seen weirder.
Yeah. We have seen weirder.
So anyway, I was waiting for her to be a lesbian, but it doesn't happen.
Yeah. I will say, yes, it did feel a little insta-love by the end because they slept together once and suddenly he's like very much in love. But I mean, I liked the tension between the two of them. I liked him kind of as a character just because like he fits a lot of the boxes that I normally like, i.e. Resand. But I mean, I don't have as much of like critiques as you do, Casey.
Yeah, no. He was the only person not obsessed with her because she was a diviner. He slowly grew to love her for her strength and her like stick-to-itiveness and some of her other personality traits instead of just be like, diviner, I want to sleep with you because you're a diviner.
Freaking, I want to fuck a diviner.
No wonder his name rhymes with Tamlin.
Yeah. LOL, that's so funny. I wonder if she did that on purpose.
Hamlin and then Roderick starts with an R.
Because the whole book, I was like, why does Hamlin sound so familiar? Why does Hamlin sound so familiar? And it's because of Tamlin. And
I'm Sybil or Six. I don't know. I can't make the favorite connection.
Yeah. I was like, I don't know where you're going with that one.
I was like, oh, Sybil and Six. And I was like, never mind. That's both her. Holidays.
Blonde moment.
Okay. Well, there's more characters in this journey. One of them is Maud and the other knights. And they kind of go through this journey through the other hamlets in order to find the omens. And the knights are a big part of that because they have to show up and like do this celebration with the king at every
I have a point to make about Maud. Is one of my favorite things about this book is that the whole gang of little friends were not 20 years old.
Yes.
You had a 17-year-old, you had late 20s, and you had Maud who was like 41, and I really, really loved that it was more realistic, more diverse, that they had someone with wisdom in their group who was a good person. Like, I loved the age differences in Maud in general.
Yes. She was definitely more of, like, the older, like, wiser, sage person in the group.
Yeah. Like, a mother figure thinking she's not a mother figure.
Yes.
Like more fully of a mother figure than the abbess ever was. Yes. So they contrast in that way. And I love it.
But she's, like, no, would never be a mother. She's not, like, the mother type.
Maud is probably my second favorite character.
I agree. Yeah. I liked Maud a lot. She also is, like, because of her age, she has some life experiences that really help inform some of her opinions. And I really liked the moment when she slays the sprite and she's still like, she goes off on it, but then after the fact reflects on it and be like, was that the right thing to do? Like, that's what I've been taught my whole life, but like, was that truly the right thing to do?
Right.
And she didn't defeat it and magically get away unscathed.
No, she was fully hurt.
Right. No, I did really appreciate, Caitlin, I think that's a great point about the kind of age diversity in the group. The whole time I was reading, I was like, why does this group feel so unique to me? And it's because they're not all 21 years old. And it did vastly improve the reading experience. And, you know, God forbid I ever have to read a book about another three 21-year-old boys doing something. At least we've gotten to the point where there's normally at least one woman, but the age diversity was like much needed and added a lot to their journey.
And interesting that the king was the youngest one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you're like, are they babysitters? Are they friends? Are they family?
Yeah.
Turns out babysitters.
It's babysitters. Yes,
babysitters. So he claims his power in the end. He's got his little schemes going, as we learn.
Yeah. The little kid rebelled. He didn't want to take a nap.
He's tired of living in the shadow of his big bad brother and mom.
Okay, well, can we talk about my favorite character?
The yes. Gargoyle, Bartholomew.
Yes. Everything that Gargoyle said was either so funny or so insightful. There was no in between.
Yep.
And I loved how he just like wanted to leave and wanted to be with her. And he was the reason I knew what happened in the end. He was like, the Abbess said you'd be the one that would stay with me mm-hmm. before he went with her. And so I was like, okay, I know where this is going. But yeah. I didn't totally get how why he was so different from the other gargoyles. And now we know. What did you think about that reveal?
I loved Bartholomew. He made me laugh like out loud, like reading. Mm-hmm. I actually audibly laughed at my phone. He was so funny. And his character added some much needed like levity.
Yeah.
His tragic backstory. I'm going to sound so heartless, but I was honestly kind of like, whatever. Like, I knew.
No, I agree, actually.
Same.
Okay,
good. In the grand scheme of all the reveals, I was like, oh.
Yeah. It ain't that tragic.
Like, I liked learning how the gargoyles formed. I hadn't guessed that completely, not until we met the other woman who was turning into a gargoyle. But, yeah, his tragic backstory, I was kind of just like, oh, no. Yet another abused child. Like
another foundling.
Right. Another foundling.
Also confusing is they were all there for like 10 years, but they were like, they're saying foundlings like they're children, but they're like 16 or something when they're taken.
Mm-hmm. Is there mid-20s?
So he's really probably more like, he's probably also more like a teenager than a child.
Yes.
Who knows? Because he was the first. So
yeah. I did not realize one thing I didn't predict is that all of them, including Bartholomew, died.
Yeah.
And that the spring brought them back to life.
I didn't realize that as well.
I didn't guess that either. I did.
That was interesting.
Yeah.
And they're high stakes because Homegirl. Maybe I'm the only one that thought this. Homegirl destroyed the whole chapel in the spring, and Homegirl needs the spring water to not turn into a gargoyle.
Yeah. Yes. I was like, girl, what are you doing?
The whole time. I was like, so that means Sybil is also technically ever living. Like, technically, she would live forever.
Yes.
And it alluded to that. Someone said longer than you'll ever know or something.
Yeah, and she's going to become a gargoyle.
Yeah. I was literally like, so what are we going to do about this, fam? Apparently nothing in book one, but...
Yeah, I was like, you just destroyed what's keeping you from turning into Bartholomew.
Yeah. I mean, fair. Like, love Bartholomew. So I guess
understand. She was probably a little caught up in the moment.
Yeah.
There was a lot going on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I loved Bartholomew. I loved his little, like, misquoting, like, general, mm-hmm. like, idioms and phrases. Like, it was just so cute. He's
been for, like, a couple hundred years.
Yeah. But, like, he would, like, mix up the words. It was, like, so cute and so funny.
Which is also interesting because it's a relatively new religion in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's only, like, a few generations old.
Yeah. But as soon as he started talking about, like, do you want to hear a story? I was like, oh, is it your story? I was like, it's got to be his story, the story of the abbess.
I thought he was just going to repeat what the abbess said at the spring, so I actually didn't get that part.
Oh, really? The whole time, I was like, quit ignoring his story. Like, this is obviously essential to the plot.
Yes.
And then there's that bit at the intro that I still am a little, I don't know.
And I knew his name would be Bartholomew because saying Bartholomew.
It was him trying to remember.
Yeah.
I'm surprised that the abbess let him live, quite frankly.
Same.
I guess he was useful and she never thought he'd leave, but.
That
she made new diviners because he started, like, realizing.
Yeah. I did think there were some, not necessarily plot holes, but things I found a little unsatisfying kind of along those lines. Because I was also like, okay, so the Abbess does not need to send the spring water in the form of the diviners, mm-hmm. which she says that she does because she has realized that over time the diviners stop being obedient to her and start questioning things and wanting to leave the Abbey. But I was kind of like, then why does she send their bodies? Like, why doesn't she just kill them? I guess she wants to get rid of the evidence, but I was just
said
like,
giving it to them, the water diluted, at least keeps them loyal enough to keep wanting more.
But they'll still want more no matter what. Like,
right. But it keeps them alive and it keeps them beholden to her. But it's gross.
But it's not even keeping them alive. Like, they just don't even realize that, like, you can live without the spring water.
Yeah, you just turn into a gargoyle.
Yeah, I mean, the weaver
was fine.
But she hated being alive.
Yeah.
She wasn't willing to
pay the price.
She was like, no, I was coming to visit Bartholomew. I was like, wait. Sad.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's sad. Did you guys expect Benji to become a villain?
Yes.
Early, 100%.
Yeah. It was like halfway through, I was like, he's actually no. It's when he was having the meeting with the other knights. I was like,
mm.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then he was like trying to force Sybil into like servitude and like the knights,
yeah, the vows.
Thing, the vows, yeah. And like Rory was like fighting back and stuff like that. I was like, oh, he doesn't like that. He wants her to be completely submissive to him.
Homegirl, if you love Roderick, why are you becoming a knight? They're not supposed to dally together.
Yeah, I was also confused as to why she felt like she'd had to become a knight.
Yeah.
I was like, why do we have to do this? Like,
well, even Bartholomew is like, I think we swear ourselves to people when we're too scared to face our own cause or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, listen to him, and you still did it.
Anyway, I knew the king was going to be evil from the very start because they never ask him what he's going to do with all these magical objects. Mm-hmm. And I was like, that seems important. And it seems like it's never really coming up, which is crazy.
Also, like, big, power like, for ups.
Joffrey Game of Thrones energy.
Yes, he did.
Yeah, he did.
Boy, and king. I mean, also, like, his whole goal was revenge. And then, like, pendulum swings back and forth. So if the pendulum is swinging back towards him, it's going to go really extreme. Like, that's just how politics works.
Yeah. I will be reading the second book.
I will as well. And Casey will not.
I won't. To be honest, y'all could probably convince me, though. But only if it's, like, that good.
Okay, but you didn't even read the second One Dark Window, and it was that good.
Yes.
I know. It's been on my list for forever. I just haven't gotten to it.
We have a break.
I know. Maybe during the break I'll read it. I was
supposed to be reading Mistborn.
Yeah. Oh, fuck. Well, we'll see what happens. I was going to read more Dungeon Crawler Carl, but.
Yeah, slay. Book three. I'm partway through.
That's so funny. I love being ahead of you now in the series that you convinced me to read. Like,
I was ahead in the reading for a while, and then I was behind. So I had to, like, punish myself and say, no Dungeon Crawler Carl until you do your homework.
Exactly. That's what I had to do to myself, too. I might finish Manacled. We'll see.
Oh, yeah. I forgot you were reading that.
Yeah, I'm on page like 500, which unfortunately is only halfway.
Any other book, you're like, wow, you're at the end. That one, oh no.
not at the end, not even close.
Anyway. Okay, well, last thing, book recommendations. I recommend One Dark Window.
No.
I hate to do that, but it's kind of a good recommendation.
It's a unique magic system.
It's too obvious.
Less of a love story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Similar love interests, though. She's so unique in how she writes, like, the unhappy fairy tales.
Yeah.
That is very unique.
I'm going to go with one, or I was about to say One Dark Window. God damn it. I meant a Fate Inked in Blood.
Okay.
I think it has similar vibes.
I think I'm going to recommend Wayward, which was another Caitlin recommendation, I think. But it was pretty good. It's witchy, and it kind of has a magic system, and it's also sort of like dark fairy tale vibes. It's not as fantasy-esque. It's based in the real world, but I feel like it has sort of similar vibes of witchiness and magic.
I think that's what it is. I think her writing gives way more like Brothers Grimm fairy tales, like not happy fairy tales.
Yes.
Yes. That's what I love about
Dark.
Dark Window. That's what I loved about the beginning, too. Like, I'm telling you, those, like, oracles just feel so, like, Greek mythology, like, dark.
It's a very good way of describing it as grim fairy tales.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's it. Another episode done. Another year finished. Thanks for listening, you guys. Please rate and review our podcast. And if you want more from us, you can find it at Busy Girls Pod pretty much everywhere. And at busygirlspod.com.
Yeah. And with that, I'm Catherine.
I'm Caitlin.
And I'm Casey. Thanks for listening. And when you get a chance, take a break with the Busy Girls Book Club.